Thank you, Lavanya Mataji. We are very, very fortunate to hear from Her Grace Shyamala Sakhi Mataji. There are lots of things to tell about her, but she has requested me to bare minimum. So, she is a teacher for the last 15 years in Mayapur Institute of Higher Education. And Mataji and Prabhuji Shauri Prabhu, who is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, lives in Sandy Ridge Temple. I have observed that they both are very committed to their sadhana and especially their reading schedules. Every day, Mataji and Prabhuji read chapter of Bhagavad Gita and one chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, and I think more. And so I learn a lot from their association, and thank you so much, Mataji, for giving us your valuable association. Welcome to the conference call, and please take over. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Lalitangi Mataji, for that introduction. It's a little bit over the top, but thank you nevertheless. I want to thank Shama Gauri Mataji for asking me. She's been asking me a lot, and I've been saying no. So she's very persistent, so I'm grateful that she again asked me to give class. Can everyone hear me clearly?
Yes, Mataji.
Yes, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So I've never actually given a class on the phone. I think maybe I've done it once a few years ago. So it's a little bit awkward for me. I'm used to more giving a class to a live audience. So this is a little bit of a strange experience, but let's see how it goes. I also want to apologize in advance. I've been suffering from hay fever for the last 3 weeks. So my voice is a little bit sore, and I have a tendency to cough occasionally. So I apologize for that in advance. So today, I know you regularly in the morning, the Bhagavatam class is scheduled. But when Shama Gauri Mataji asked me, I said I would like to speak on Bhagavad Gita, specifically chapter 15, because since it's the month of Purushottam and we're just about to finish in a couple of days, I thought it would be nice to discuss and hear a little bit about chapter 15. So that's the reason I chose this, and kind of breaking from the norm of the Bhagavatam schedule. So we'll start with the introduction, if you could all join me. Om Ajnana Timirindhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Hari Om Tat Sat. So this is chapter 15 entitled Purushottam Yoga, the Yoga of the Supreme Person. So what I would like to do is give a little bit of an overview of the entire chapter, place it in context, and speak a little bit about all the verses. And if we have time, I don't know how late we can go on, maybe we could focus on a particular verse that I was asked to speak on. So we'll see how it goes. So the 15th chapter is a very short chapter. The other short chapter in the Bhagavad Gita is chapter 12. Both chapters are very, very significant for different reasons. And it's a very easy chapter to memorize because it's only 20 verses. The 15th chapter comes in the, if we divide the Bhagavad Gita into three parts, 666, I'm sure you're all aware that the first six chapters deal with karma yoga, how karma yoga leads to bhakti. Then the middle six chapters are directly bhakti yoga. And the last six chapters are how jnana yoga leads to bhakti yoga. So that starts from chapter 13 to 18. So we can see that 15 falls in that the third half of the Bhagavad Gita. So the seed or the bij for this chapter is actually in chapter 13, where Krishna speaks about prakriti and purusha. In text 22, he says, Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janganan karanam gunasangasya sad asad yoni janmashu. So the seed of all these latter chapters is found in this verse, because Krishna is saying the seed is our desire to enjoy. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti janganan. Bhunte, because we want to enjoy. The Purusha, here referring to the individual living entity, is placed within Prakriti. Purusha Prakriti Stohi. And why is he placed in Prakriti? Why is he placed in material world? Because he wants to enjoy. Bhunte Prakriti Janganan. So that is the seed of why we come into this material world. And from that seed, we all know when we plant a seed in the ground, then something starts to grow. A little sapling grows. And then when it's watered, it becomes bigger and bigger and becomes a plant. And then depending on what type of seed it is, it grows and it produces fruit. So this seed is planted and now it grows into a huge banyan tree, which is what Krishna opens this chapter about, opens a chapter with. So Purushottam Yoga, why is this chapter called Purushottam Yoga? Because it describes the process by which he can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and begin the process of devotional service. Now the first verse is actually quite enigmatic. It's a very puzzling verse because Krishna uses an allegory. He doesn't explicitly state what this tree is, but if we read the purports, and actually without Srila Prabhupada's purports, we can't actually understand any of the Vedic literatures. It's only because of his purports, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, that we can really understand. Many of us have experienced, I mean, at least I do, that I used to read before I became a devotee, before coming to Krishna consciousness, I used to read chapter 12, just kind of like a parrot automatically. But unless we have the insight of the acharyas and their realizations, we cannot actually make head or tail. So Prabhupada explains more about this tree, our entanglement within it, but Krishna specifically doesn't refer to what this tree is. So in chapter 14, so the bij, the reason for this tree to grow is coming from chapter 13 because of the desire to enjoy. And then in chapter 14, Krishna concluded chapter 14 by saying that the process of bhakti yoga is the way and the means and the method by which we can transcend the modes of material nature. Mam cha yo vibhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sa gunan samatite tan brahma bhuya kalpate. So this is the process for transcending the modes of material nature, but to attain devotion to Krishna, one needs detachment from the material world. So chapter 15 begins by explaining the need for detachment. So as I said, the chapter has 20 verses. So the first 5 verses of this chapter, if you have a Bhagavad Gita, it would be good, because then you can follow along, you can flip the pages and see which verses I'm referring to. So the first 5 verses tell us that we can attain liberation by detachment. And if we don't become detached from this material world, the illusory tree, then there will be bondage. So verses 6 to 11 say, okay, you don't want to become detached, then there will be bondage in transmigration. We'll go from one species to another. Verses 12 to 15 tell us how Krishna assists us in our material existence and in our spiritual endeavor. It's called the Jnana Chakshusha section. And very important, text 16 to 18, this is the essence of Vedanta. It's called the Trishloki Gita. We have the Chatushloki Gita, which is in the 10th chapter, 10, 8, 9, 10, 11. And here we have another one called the Trishloki Gita, because this is the essence of Vedanta philosophy. Then text 19 and 20 talk about how, if we know Krishna, we know everything. So knowing Krishna means knowing everything. So we'll begin with the first verse. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Urdhva Mula Madhashakam, Ashvattam Prahuravyam, Chandam Siyasa Parnani, Yastam Veda, Saveda Vit. So as I said before, Krishna does not explicitly say in this verse that the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. And he says there's a tree. He says there's a tree that's imperishable. It's a banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. And one who knows this tree is a knower of the Vedas. Interesting that this material world is called avyayam. Avyayam means imperishable. Now, how can this material world be imperishable when we know it's not? We know that matter and material forms are not eternal. So how is it avyaya? How is it imperishable? Because actually, even though matter and material forms are not eternal, but material existence is eternal. And the example is sometimes given of a jail. The person's stay in a jail might be temporary, but the jail continues to exist. So sometimes the material world is manifest, and sometimes it is not manifest. Now, the word ashwatta basically refers to some tree of the fig family. Prabhupada here translates it as a banyan tree. And the word ashwatta has multiple meanings in Sanskrit. One meaning is ashva means not tomorrow, and stha means to stay. So that which will not exist tomorrow, which is the material world. Ashva also means horse. Stha means to be situated. And normally, if we observe, we see a horse stands on 3 legs. Generally, the horse has 1 leg up. So we know the material world is ek pad vibhuti, and the 3 pad vibhuti is in the spiritual world. So this world is ashvata, and it's upside down. It's like a horse with 1 leg up, and it's a very uncomfortable position. Srila Prabhupada says that if someone catches you and ties you up and puts you upside down, you'll be very miserable. It's a very, very uncomfortable position. So he says this whole material world is like that. Urdhva mulam. The mulam, the root, should have been down, but it is up, and therefore it is uncomfortable. And Chandamsi refers to Vedic, refers to hymns, Vedic hymns. And Parnani means the leaves. Generally, if there is no leaves on a tree, it's not very attractive. In the winter time, we see some trees shed their leaves and they look very bare and kind of ugly. So we're attracted by the leaves. And these leaves are referred to the Vedas, the hymns of the Vedas. So Vedic hymns are just one part of this tree. It's not the whole tree. So the purpose of the Vedas is not to just recite the Vedic hymns. It's to actually, so the person who is a knower of the Vedas, Vedavit, is someone who knows the predicament of the conditioned soul and the way to get out of it. So that person is a Vedavit, someone who knows the tree. Now in the next verse, someone might think, okay, well, this tree that's upside down, but Krishna says, no, it's not just as simple as that. He says, adhaschordvam pratastashashakha guna pravidda vishaya pravala adhaschamula nisantitani karmanu bandhani manushya loke. So it's not so simple, because if you've ever seen a banyan tree, it's very difficult to make out the main trunk, because there's so many branches. They go up, they go down, there's some roots, they grow down in all directions. It's very difficult to make out. And Krishna himself says, you know, it's very difficult. You don't know where it begins and where it ends. And how does this tree flourish? Guna pravidda vishaya pravala. It flourishes by the effect of the mode. It's watered by the modes of material nature, just like we water a tree with just water. So the modes of material nature are watering this tree. And the root is Brahman, from where the whole material creation expands, so up to below. So the modern conception is evolution. The Vedic conception is devolution. So Brahma, the first living being, he creates, and from him all other living entities come. And these living entities, they can go either up or down, because there are many branches. Some are situated on the upper branches, some are situated on the lower branches. And what determines their situation on these branches? Well, it depends on their karma. In the 14th chapter, Krishna had said, urdvam gacchanti sattvastha madhye tishtanti rajasa jaganya gunivrittista adho gacchanti tamasa. So this is the way the living entities move up and down, and the way they create their destiny. So according to the actions a living entity performs, their trajectory can change. So if someone is on the path of punya, it leads to svargaloka. If someone's on the path of pap, or sinful activity, it leads to narakloka. So, but what is actually causing these movement in the branches? It's the different modes. So if we cultivate the mode of goodness, we go up. If we cultivate the mode of ignorance, we go down. So a normal tree grows up towards sunlight. This tree grows towards sense objects, because people are seeking sense gratification. And because of sense gratification, karmanu bandhani manushya loke, we get bound up by karma in this world. So at this point, Arjuna has a question about this tree with the branches going up and down, and he wants a further explanation of it. So Krishna says in the next two verses, Narupa masyeha tatopalabhyate nanto nachade nachsampratishta ashvatthamenam savirudhamulam asanga shastrena dhidena chitva tathapadam tatparimargivtavyam yasmin gata nanivritanti bhuya tameva chadyam purusham prapadye yatha pravetti prasuta purani. So Arjuna wants to know a little bit more about this tree. So Krishna says, no, it's not explainable. There's a saying, don't try to figure it out. Just get out. Upalabhyate means it to be understood. Narupam asya tathopalabhyate. This tree cannot be understood. It's so big We don't know where it begins, where the middle is, or where the end is. It's just impossible to figure out. So this hugeness, this is talked about elsewhere in the Gita, and that's in chapter 11. Excuse me. Where Krishna is talking, is revealing the universal form. Na antam, na madhyam, na punastavadim, pasyam visveshwara visvarupa. So both are the same thing. The tree represents the material universe, and the Virat Rupa also represents the material universe. And both are huge. And the universe in and of itself is not infinite. It is finite, but from our perspective, it appears to be finite because we are so, so tiny. So Krishna says, don't try to figure this out. Just try to get out. And how do you get out? And this tree is not easy because it's very deeply rooted. Su viruddha mulena. It's very deeply rooted. And the way to get out is asanga shastrena. What's the significance of this word? Asanga shastrena. Shastra means weapon, and asanga. So purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam gunasangasya sad asad yoni janmashu. So the bondage happened because of sangha, because of association. And liberation will happen by asanga, by detachment, by detachment. So we have to cut it apart by detachment. Asanga drudena chitva. With determination, one has to cut down. Because our material desires are so very deeply rooted. Su virudha mulena. And then Krishna continues, and he makes a very significant point that it's just not enough to break from this material existence. We have to do something else. Our process is not just a process of negation. It's not just negative. We have to replace some. We have to have something positive to replace with. So he says it's not enough. This is not enough. So in the next verse, in text 4, he says, "Tathapadam tat parimargitavyam." So one has to go to a place of no return. And what do we do there? Well, we surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tameva chadyam purusham prapadye. We surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead from whom the creation is manifested. Now, this verse refutes Mayavadi philosophy. We could say, how is that? Well, because the Mayavadis say that just for the sake of liberation, we can conceive of a person and meditate on him, and then ultimately we merge into this impersonal Brahman beyond that person. But Krishna here says, no, you attain liberation by asanga, and in the liberated stage, surrender to the Supreme Person. Now here Krishna is not referring to himself in the first person. We see he does this often. Sometimes he'll refer to himself in the third person. So who is that Supreme Person? He's not saying it's him, but we know it's him. And later on, he will reveal who that person is. That comes on later on in this chapter. But here he's referring to himself in the third person. So now text four said that we have to surrender. But how do we surrender? What is the process for doing that? So Krishna says, Nirmana Moha Chitta Sangha Dosha Adhyatma Nitya Vinivritta Kama Dvande Vimukta Sukha Dukha Samje Gachanti Amuda Padamabhya Yamtat. So, okay, I have to surrender, but how do I do that? Now we know for cutting off this material existence, there is the detachment, the Asanga Shastrena, but for surrender, what is the process? So that process of surrender is described in this verse. Moha, it means illusion, and man is pride or arrogance. So nirmana moha jitta sangha dosha, that pride that arises from material association, we have to give that up and be spiritually situated. And once we're spiritually situated, we become free from lust. Nivritta Let's see, is this, yes. Nivritta kama. So nivritta refers to retirement. Vinivritta refers to permanent retirement. We have to become permanently retired from our material desires. Prabhupada said in a lecture that he said that service to lust is like slavery. Normally when a person has a job, a service, he gets a salary, and after some time he retires. But if one is a slave, there is no retirement from slavery. To the last drop of energy that there is in the slave master will extract that work from the slave. So similarly, lust makes us labor to the last moment of our life and into our next life also. Therefore, Prabhupada translates it as vinivritta, one who is done with lust, who is completely done, no more. Sometimes when people argue, you know, in the heat of the moment, with anger, they say, that's it, I'm done, I'm finished with you, nothing more. So that's what we actually need to do with lust. We just have to say, no more, I'm done, I'm not, I don't want to be your slave anymore. Complete retirement. And then Krishna says that gachanti amudha padam avyayam tat. Amudha, someone who is not unbewildered, someone who is unbewildered. Now Krishna later on will use this word vimudha in the 10th verse of this chapter. So this first five verses are describing what is this banyan tree, how we are entangled with it, within it, what is the process of freeing ourselves from it. So this is all the negative. Now we have to have something positive. So what happens? Where do we go? Okay, so we've learned the process of surrender. We know we have to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And where do we go? What is so attractive? So we have to be attracted by something. So in text 6, Krishna speaks of a little bit. He gives a little hint of what the spiritual world is like. And there's a very interesting statement in the purport that I really like, Prabhupada says here. So the verse is, na tad bhasate suryo, na shashanko na pavakah, yad gatva na nivartante, tad dhamma paramam mama. So that supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. Now, the acharyas explain this verse has multiple meanings. Sun, moon, and fire. Krishna says this place is not illuminated. He says there's no need for this. Krishna is very specific. It's not that there is no sun or moon, because we know all the pastimes of Krishna. When Krishna performed the rasa dance, it was full moon night. So it's not that they don't exist, but there's no need for it. Whereas in the material world, we cannot function. The material world cannot exist unless there's a sun, unless there's moon, unless there's fire. But in the spiritual world, there's no need for it. So the acharyas say that this verse has some metaphorical meaning. The sun, we know, it enables us to see. It facilitates our capacity of sight. So no sun refers that that place is not visible to the eye. And the moon is in charge of the mind. So no moon means it can't be conceived. It can't be conceived by the mind. And fire is connected to speech. You say, oh, he gave a fiery speech. So it's referring that this cannot be the spiritual world cannot be, it's not visible to the eye. It cannot be conceived by the mind, and it cannot be described by the tongue. Sorry, one second. Yes. So as I said before, Krishna says there's no need for the sun, moon, or fire in the spiritual world. It's very, very specific. And he contradicts this later on in this in text 12, where he says, yad aditya gatam tejo jagat bhasyate kalam. So in the material world, we need this. We cannot function without the sun, moon, or fire. Okay, so now Krishna's given us a little bit of a hint of what the spiritual world is like. There's no need for any of this. And in the purport, in the second or third paragraph of this purport, Prabhupada says, one should be captivated by this information. He should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. So in the previous verse, Krishna had spoken in the third person. Now here he says, Tad dham paramam mama. Now he's saying in the first verse, and he's connecting what he said in the fourth verse, in the third person, he says to the first person, that abode is my abode. It's not anyone else's, it's my abode. And once you reach this abode, there's no coming back. So moving on to text 7. Krishna says, okay, so if there's no asanga, there's no detachment, and you don't practice devotional service and surrender, what is the result? The result is mameivamsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanah manashashtani indriyani prakritisthani karshati. So there's karsham and karshati. So akarshan means attraction, and karshati means the struggle. So if there's no attraction to Krishna, then there's karshati. We struggle. We struggle in the material world. And why do we struggle? How do we struggle? Manashashtani indriyani prakritisthani karshati. Because of our mind and senses. Manashashtani indriyani. They drag us, the mind and senses, they drag us from one sense object to another. Not only that, they drag us from one body to another, from universe to universe. And Krishna is mentioning the mind separately, mana shashtani indriyani. So there's the other senses, but mind is mentioned separately because it is so formidable. It's the chief among the senses. Now this verse has like two distinct parts, and Prabhupada would generally quote the first two lines, mameivamsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. That's what he would often quote. And this verse also refutes Mayavad philosophy, because Krishna says, mameivamsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. The living entities are my eternal fragmental parts. It's not that they are fragmental now and later on they merge. No, they're eternally fragmental. So the first part says, okay, the souls, the individual souls, are my part and parcel. And the second part says the soul suffers in material existence due to mind and senses. Now, what's the connection between these two parts? And the connection is that if the soul doesn't act as Krishna's part and parcel, then he becomes controlled by Maya and suffers due to his mind and senses. So the first state of serving Krishna is joyful. It's a natural state. But serving Maya is painful. So we're eternally part and parcel of Krishna. That's our original joyful position. And the second is the artificial, painful position of the soul who does not want to surrender and who doesn't have any attraction to the process of bhakti yoga. And then we're just bound up, we're shackled by iron chains, the modes of material nature. We're bound up by our false ego. And then once we're bound up, then so many schemes come to enjoy. And they all come from the mind, because the mind is the chief agent that's driving us in material existence. Okay, so now if we have not surrendered, we haven't become detached, what happens? Well, we're entangled in the material world and we will be transmigrating, going from one body to another. And that's explained in text 8. Shariram yad avapnoti yad chapyut krimatishwara grihit vaitani samyati vayur gandhan ivashayat. So we attain one body. As the air carries aroma, so the conception we have at the time of death takes us to another body. The word Ishvara here, Utkramat Ishvara. Ishvara, the Acharyas have explained it differently. It can be used in our sarcastic sense. What kind of Ishvara or controller is this? He gets some kind of body. He doesn't know what kind of body, and then he has to suddenly leave that kind of body. So what kind of a Ishvara is this? That's in a sarcastic sense. In another sense, the Jiva has some control about where he will go. Because we can choose. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tadintyante kalevaram. So depending on our conception, we have that freedom. We have that choice. What do we want to do with that independence? So we can choose. We can cultivate the mode of goodness and practice devotional service, and then we can choose another type of body. We don't have to be forced. And this text is talking about something very interesting. We know that vayu is subtle. We can't see it, but we can feel it. And the gandha or the fragrance, it's also subtle. We can't see it, but we can perceive it with another sense, the sense of smell. So one subtle sense object is carrying another subtle, not so perceivable object. So similarly, the soul, which is not perceivable to us, it carries this conception. And that's what's the cause of going from one body to another. Vayu gandhan ivashayat. Okay, so moving, now what happens? Okay, so the conception that we have takes us to another body. How does that other body form? That's described in text 9. Shotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam grahanam eva cha adhishtaya manaschayam vishayan upasevate. So in text 7, Mamevamsha Jiva Loke, Jiva Bhuta Sanata, Mana Shastani Indrani, Prakriti Sani Karshati, Krishna talked about mana, the mind. Now in this text, in text 9, he talks about the significant role that is played by the mind in the process of transmigration. So just like the palm is the center of five fingers, we have five fingers and the palm is the center. So the mind is the center of the senses, of the five senses. All the input from the various senses are coming to the mind. Adhishtaya manaschayam. So the mind is which is what is integrating and taking all this input and making sense of it and is accepting or rejecting. So then the living entity forms a particular type of, has a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch. This is grouped about the mind. And why does this happen? Because Vishayan Upasevata, he wants to enjoy. Excuse me, I just need to take a drink of water. Now, how does a living entity leave or stay in the body? And who can understand this? So Krishna says in text 10, Utkramantam sitam vapi bhunjanan vankunanvitam vimudha. So in the previous verse, he said, those who are amudha, those who are not bewildered can understand. But here, vimudha nanu pashyanti, pashyanti jnana chakshusa. So those who are bewildered, those who want to enjoy the material world, sense gratification, they're bewildered. They cannot understand. Because they're bewildered. They're bewildered by the goodness. They cannot see this movement and interaction that's happening with the material modes of nature. But one who has jnana chakshusha, the eyes to see this, they can understand. So Krishna will talk about what this jnana chakshusha is upcoming verses. So what determines or what differentiates that some people have this jnana chakshusha and others don't? Well, Krishna answers that in the next verse.
Yatanto yoginaschainam pashyanti atmanivastitam yatantopi akritatmano nainam pashyanti achetasa.
Now here in this verse, Krishna is not talking about materialistic people here. He's talking about the endeavoring transcendentalist and those who are situated in self-realization. They're both endeavoring. One person can see and the other can't. Why is that? Because Krishna says they have to situate themselves on a spiritual platform. Now, it seems a little paradoxical. Does that mean they have to be self-realized to perceive this? No. Krishna is saying one has to situate himself on that platform that is conducive to spiritual perception and realization. So I think in this purport, Prabhupada says, yes, there's so many yoga societies where people are trying, but they're just actually engaging in gymnastic exercises. So unless one is situated or takes up a process, even though one might be doing so-called yoga, one will not understand. One has to take up a process, a kind of sadhana, some kind of sadhana. Otherwise, one will not be able to see, even though one may try. Now, Arjuna will ask, he's having a question in his mind, so how will materialistic persons who are not willing to follow a process, how will they even understand that there is a higher reality? What if they're not situated on the spiritual platform and they don't follow a process? How will they even know that there's a spiritual reality beyond this material world? So Krishna says, well, you know, if one is thoughtful, one can see glimpses of that higher reality even in this world. So from text 12 to 15 begins the Jnana Chakshusha section, that if we look very carefully, we can start perceiving things that point to a higher reality. And in these few verses, Krishna is actually mercifully revealing to us how we can't even exist without him. He's assisting us in material existence and also in our spiritual endeavor. So he says, yad aditya gatam tejo jagat bhasite khilam yat chandramasi yat chagno tat tejo vidhi mamakam. So the same three elements that he talked about, sun, moon, and fire, in text 6, Krishna is bringing that here again. He says, all of the illuminating potency for all these things, they come from me. Even to survive and enjoy in this material world, there has to be some arrangement. And this arrangement is made by there's a higher design and intelligence behind it. So someone who's looking at this universe, but just by looking at the universe, the world around us, and even within our own bodies, looking at the universe, looking around us, and looking within our own bodies, we can understand that there's a presence of a higher arrangement, and this should prompt us, and this is pointing to a higher reality. And we know people who live close to nature, they can perceive this. The city people are a bit more disconnected, you know, they don't get time to go out and even appreciate the daylight. You're cooped up in offices with artificial light, work late, you never see the moon, never see the sun. So people who live in the city are a bit disconnected, but those who live closer to nature, they can actually perceive this. So Krishna's arrangement on a cosmological level, then on an earthly level, and then our own bodily level, and on a spiritual level, this is what's talked about in these following texts. So text 13, it's about 8:15. I don't know, when am I supposed to stop? I can try to kind of rush through this. It's 8:15, we're on text 13 now. Can anyone tell me what time I have to go to?
Yeah, Hare Krishna Mataji, you can go for 10 more minutes.
10 more minutes, okay. I'll try and speed up a little bit here. So, text 13. Gama Vishya Jabhutani Dharayami Hamojasa Pushnami Choshadi Sarva Soma Bhutva Prasatmaka. So Krishna's talking about, we know how sunlight is important for growing anything, any farmer knows. But Krishna says, no, the moon is also important. The juicy content of the vegetables actually comes from the moon. And then how are these planets sustained? Well, they're sustained by his energy. We can call it the law of gravity, but that's not really explaining what it is. It's just describing, okay, the planets float because there's a law of gravity. But where does it come from? That is what is not explained to us by science. They just describe things to us. So Krishna is supplying the juicy content of the vegetables, which is given by the moon. And the demigod of moon is in charge also of the mind. So this is Krishna's arrangement, his assistance, in terms of the terrestrial arrangement, how he's helping us. Now, as far as our own individual level, he talks about in text 14, aham vaishvanara bhutva praninam deham ashrita pranapana samayukta pachami anam chaturvidam. So Vaishvanara is a demigod who is in charge of digestion. We just take so many things for granted. Even when we eat, we don't realize what is actually happening. There's, according to Ayurveda, Prabhupada mentioned the purport, there's a fire that's there. And if this fire is not strong, we can't digest. And where does this digestive power come from? Well, it comes from Krishna. And we don't think about it until it stops working. Then we have to take all kinds of medications and think, oh, well, my digestion is really bad and I have to alter my diet. And we just forget that this is all coming from Krishna. So this was all on a material level. In text 15, Krishna talks about how he helps us spiritually. Also, it's the confection. And he helps us, especially in spiritual life, especially for devotees, because they are receptive. And this is a very famous verse that most all of us know. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matta smritir jnana vapohanam cha vedascha sarveraha vedyo vedanta krid veda vichaham. So this verse, sarvasya chaham, this is very, it's all encompassing. He's in everyone's heart, sarvasya, of all living entities. And sannivishto, he's very close. He's closer than we can even imagine. So what is Krishna sitting in our heart who is so close to us? What is he doing? What does he do? Well, what does he give? He gives matta, smritir, jnanam, and apohanam. So smriti means memory, jnana means knowledge, and apohanam means forgetfulness. So Krishna gives jnana. He gives the jnana externally through guru, sadhu, and shastra. And all this is based on our desire. He gives the knowledge about the futility of material enjoyment. You know, you won't find any happiness, just serve me. So if we apply the jnana that Krishna is giving through shastra, through guru, through sadhu, if we desire to apply that jnana, then Krishna gives smriti. And if we don't want to apply that jnana, then Krishna gives apohanam. Okay, you want to forget me? Then I'll give you the forgetfulness. So it all depends on our desire, and we can choose what do we want to do. Do we want to apply this in our life, or do we want to continue with our illusion? So this verse also has two parts. The first two lines are referring to what Krishna is giving us, and the second part, he's explaining that three things, that he is the goal of the Vedas, he is the He's a compiler of the Vedas and the knower of the Vedas. Vedas cha sarv aham eva vedyo vedanta krit vedavid eva cha aham. So again, what's the connection between these two parts? The correlation between sarvasya cha aham iti sannivishto matasmit jnanam apanam cha and the next two lines. So this connection is often not contemplated or understood. So remembrance and forgetfulness Krishna gives from within, but jnana or knowledge he gives through the guru, the spiritual master, and the external the spiritual master, the external representative of Krishna. So Krishna externally gives Vedic knowledge, which contains vast variety of karmakanda rituals and jnanakanda, and then also upasanakanda, the ultimate purpose, which is bhakti yoga or devotional service. So someone may ask, well, how do you know what is the purpose of the Vedas? How do you know? Because different people say different things. There's so many philosophers, everyone has their own opinion. But here Krishna says, well, I know, because I am the one who compiled the Vedas. That's why I know it. So he's referring to himself as Vyasadeva, who is a compiler of the Vedas. So if we remember in text 1, Krishna said that one who knows the tree is a knower of the Vedas, in text 1. So here he says that I am a Vedavit. What's the difference between Krishna being Vedavit and our being the Vedavit? Well, Krishna has complete knowledge of the Vedas. We can know the purpose of the Vedas in its essence. So in quality, however, our knowledge will become like Krishna, but not in quantity, because even Krishna sometimes doesn't understand himself, because he's unlimited, so he just keeps expanding. So now he's talked about, okay, I'm the compiler of the Vedas, I'm the knower of the Vedas, and by the Vedas I'm to be known. So Arjuna is thinking, okay, well, he has a question at this point. And he says, well, what is the, can you tell me what is the essence of the Vedas? And then next comes the three verses, which are the three Shloki Gita, the essence of the Gitas, the essence of the Gita. So Krishna says, Dvayamo purusho loke sharas chakshara eva cha sharas sarvani bhutani kutastha shara uchate. So he mentions that there are two kinds of Dwa means two kinds of Purush. Krishna is Purushottam, and we are not Purushottam, we are just Purush. So in the 13th chapter, again, Krishna had talked about Purusha, Purusha Prakriti Stohi, and then in text 23, he had said, there's another Purush, Uttama Purusha, the Paramatma, who is Upadrishta Anumantacha, Bhokta. So upadrishta anumantacha. So somebody who is different from that other purusha. So this is very, very clear. Krishna is now beginning. He's giving in this 16, 17, and 18, he's giving sambandha jnana, which is essential. Unless we have sambandha jnana, we cannot proceed forward. So he says there are two kinds. One is fallible and the other is infallible. Two kinds of souls. Next verse he goes on, Uttama purushasthanya paramatmeti udarita yaloko trayam avishya bibarti avya ishvaraha. So now again Krishna speaking in the third person. He's not saying he's the Uttama Purusha. This was already made clear in the 10th chapter when Arjuna had said, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam, Adidevam. So here the same word Purusha is used, but Krishna is not saying right now who that Purusha is. So that Purusha, he has entered the three worlds. We know that's referring to Paramatma. He's entered into three worlds and he is maintaining them. Gama Vishya Chabhutani. He's entered the three worlds and he is maintaining them. So he's describing the characteristics of that Uttama Purusha. In the next verse, he will identify who that Uttama Purusha is, which is himself. यस्मात् शरम् अतीतोऽहम् अक्षरादपि चोत्तम अतोऽस्मि लोके वेदे च प्रातितः पुरुषोत्तम. So why does Krishna not tell us in the previous verse that he is the Uttama Purusha? Well, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that there's actually a progression here. He says that these three verses, 16 refers to these three verses refer to three aspects of the absolute truth. So text 16 refers to Brahman, text 17 refers to Paramatma, and text 18 refers to Bhagavan. So Krishna says, because I'm transcendental, so the transcendental are both beyond the fallible and the infallible. So the inference from this verse is that Krishna is not the same as a liberated Purusha. He's Anya. And he is Purushottam and he is Paramatma. So this is the understanding, the conclusion of the Tri Shoki Gita. What is the position? What is our position? And what is Krishna's position? And someone who understands this and knows this, what do they do? That is explained in the next verse. Yo mam eva asammudho janati purushottamam sasarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. So someone who knows me, janati, as the supreme person, purushottam, he's freed from all illusion, asammudha. Asamudha. What does he do? Sarvabhavena bharata. Bhajati. He worships me. He worships me with all his heart. Sasarvavid bhajati mam. So the word sarva comes twice. The first sarva. Sasarvavid bhajati mam. The first sarva is with vit. That means he knows everything. He's referring to the head, okay? So you have knowledge, you know with the head. It becomes enlightened as much as possible. The second sarva, sarva bhavena, refers to the heart. So with his head and heart, he surrenders to Krishna. We need both. We need both. Not just theoretical knowledge, because actually bhakti is a movement of the heart. So with the heart, sarva bhavena bharata, he worships me. Similar to in the 10th chapter, where Krishna says, sarva buddha bhava samanvitaha, is imbued with this bhava. So what is the result? If someone has this sambandha jnana and someone follows this process, so text 19 is actually now referring to abhideya. So 16, 17, 18 is sambandha jnana. Text 19 is abhideya, the process of devotional service. Now we come to prayojan. So what is the result of this knowledge? Well, he says this knowledge is confidential. Iti guyatamam shastram idam ukta mayanaga etad buddha buddhimansya kritak kritascha bharata. Well, he attains perfection. One who understands this becomes wise and his endeavors will know all perfection. So this is very confidential to know that God is a supreme person, is most confidential knowledge. And it's not just enough to know and understand the right things, but we have to do the right things. So there's sambandha, and sambandha is not enough. So if one has perfect sambandha jnana, it leads to abhideya, the process, and the process leads to the goal, the prayojan. So this chapter, that's why it's called Purushottam Yoga, because it reveals to us who that Purushottam is, that Supreme Person, and the process by which to achieve Him. So I'm going to stop here at this time. It's 8:30. I realize I've gone over time. And I wanted to focus on one particular shloka, but we didn't have time. But I did manage to speak a little bit about everything. So thank you so much for listening. This is a Sunday morning, and it's very nice that you're taking your time out to hear Shastra in the morning. So I'll stop here now. If anyone has any questions or comments, I would really appreciate that.
What a wonderful, beautiful, stunning, captivating class. I'm falling short of adjectives. It was so it was so enlivening that you started with the connection of the seed shlokas and the connection between one set of to the others, the first five and then the next five and then the next five, and then the important aspects of each shlokas with their Sanskrit meanings of particular words, plus what the acharyas meant in that. It's so beautiful. All of this was a first-time information to me. Thank you so much for your brilliant class, and we request your association more often in this conference call. So I had a question. I think I missed this point when you said that the moonlight is also important for the growth of the vegetation. And is there any scientific, you know, connection to it?
I don't know about the scientific connection, but you know, every farmer knows when they look at the farmer's almanac. I know because my husband grows. So you can ask him. He always looks at the farmer's almanac to see when it's full moon. The moon has a lot of effect, not just on our mind, but also, you know, the tides, and it has effect on vegetation. Now, what the scientific aspect, how that works out, I don't know. I'm sorry. Maybe somebody else on this conference call knows. Somebody more with a scientific mind can share their insight. I mean, we know that sunlight is needed for photosynthesis. You know, the scientists acknowledge that. But how the moon is connected scientifically with the juicy content of the vegetables, that I don't know. That would be a question for someone who's more scientifically inclined.
Yeah, this was a question asked by one of the Bhakti Vriksha members when we were discussing this. And, and I have one more question that was asked by Bhakti Vriksha and the Taiwala group by one member, Ramya Mataji. So she was asking that there are two kinds of souls, fallible and infallible, Kshara and Akshara.
Mm-hmm.
So they never make a mistake. That's the meaning of infallible.
Mm-hmm.
So then her question was, if all of us are originated, we all came from being with Krishna, and then that we have made a mistake of being envious of Krishna, and then come here down. So her question was, if they never make a mistake, and if we are there with Krishna and we made a mistake, it looks paradoxical that how we could make a mistake.
The free will is there, that minute independence is there, so that possibility always exists. Otherwise, there's no meaning to the minute independence. That's always there. But once, it's said that once if you come to the material world, when you go back, then you never come back because you've learned your lesson. You know, you have the eternal associates who never turn against Krishna, but because we have that minute independence, the possibility always exists. But once, having taken up this process, if we've come to this material world and we've learned our lesson and we go back, then we don't come back again. That's what Krishna promises. So that possibility will always be there.
Mm-hmm.
What was your question again? Can you say why it seems paradoxical that we can fall down?
Yeah.
Yes, we can fall down because we have mind independence. But once we utilize, we learn our lesson and we utilize that minute independence in the proper way, then we won't fall down. Then we become infallible.
Mm.
You know, there's a, what is it, the saying, once burnt, twice shy? So we learn our lesson here, and they say, no, I don't want to do that, even if that thought arises, which it won't, because Krishna says, you know, one never comes back, having achieved. So he's referring to the conditioned souls here when he says that they achieve my eternal abode and they never return. It's referring to those souls in the material world who have fallen, who are fallible, but who have rectified themselves and become reformed. They've taken up the process of devotional service. Then they too will become infallible. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Mataji. Thank you. So I request if anybody else has any questions or comments, please go on now.
Thank you so much for a wonderful class, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Shama Shakti Mataji. Very, very wonderful class.
Hare Bo, yes, Mataji.
Very nice.
This take is the dust. I know, Mataji, I recognize your voice. To take the dust of your lotus feet. You've seen me since my early days of Krishna consciousness in Baltimore. You're so much senior to me. I'm very embarrassed that you're actually even listening to my class here.
No, in the age maybe I'm senior, but in the knowledge you are senior.
Well, maybe that's all I have. But please bless me that I can have some devotion also.
Yeah, with knowledge comes to devotion as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because, yeah, and I hope you feel better.
Hare Krishna.
When I heard your name, I said, "Oh, good, very nice," because you. You wanted me to, you know, when we took that disciples course, and I didn't know that you were giving. And he said, "Oh, you should have come on my class." I said, "Well, maybe next time." So then this is the next time.
I don't remember that. You were going to do the disciples course in Mayapur?
We did. Me and my husband.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. That's right. I was teaching the disciples course to the ladies. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that. And so then I went there with him, because there were other ladies also, but there, and then I thought, this is it. There's another.
Right, right. Thank you so much, Mataji. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Very nice. Wonderful. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Hare Krishna. So can we end here? I'm sorry if my voice was a bit hoarse.
Very wonderful. Your voice is very nice. When the Krishna's words comes out, the teachings of Acharya comes out, it's very wonderful voice.
I have to say, though, this is very different and awkward for me, like sitting in a room and looking at my computer. It's just, it's not my preferred method. Let's just put it this way. It's not my preferred method of sharing Shastra.
Everything can be used in Krishna service.
Yes.
The devotee uses everything. So you are also using. Krishna gave you opportunity, so then you can do more.
Thank you. So can we end now here? Shama Gaur Mataji?
Hare Krishna Mataji, I think somebody has questions. Might be Anil Prabhu was asking, but couldn't get the chance. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Mataji. It's not me. Sorry.
Hare Krishna? I can't hear.
It was not me who asked the question, Mataji. Sorry. This is Anil. Hare Krishna.
Okay.
Thank you for the wonderful question, Mataji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, anybody else has any question?
Okay, so we'll end here. Thank you so much, Shama Gauri, for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you, Mataji, for the wonderful class. Let's pay our obeisances to all the Vaishnava. One chak.
Chakalpatirubhyascha kripasindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah.